Hi, this is Kalina.
And this is Gabe.
Welcome to
Bigger Than Love.
Hello, welcome to Bigger Than Love. My name's Kalina.
And I'm Gabe.
And this week, we are going to be talking about the art of repair. We think intimacy means closeness, harmony, romance, but real intimacy isn't about never drifting apart. Here's the truth. Real intimacy includes rupture and, more importantly, repair. Today, we're talking about how coming back together after conflict might actually be the most loving thing we do for others and for ourselves. So here's a question to our listeners. Could the tiniest cracks in connection actually be where intimacy begins?
Yes. Maybe.
Gabe, can you think of a time where repair was really important to you and maybe our relationship or another close relationship of yours?
Yeah. The first thing that comes to mind is between the two of us, which is a mantra that I come back to often, or that there was a time when I was actively saying this to myself, maybe during a crunchy moment, and it really resonated then, and it's true now, and I'm happy to share it, which is ask another question. Asking a follow-up question in place of where I wanted to maybe assert or insert my opinion, a tangent or something, has really served me and I believe us very well.
Yeah. I think it's really important to note here at the tip top of our conversation that these micro ruptures or moments of repair happen everywhere. Rupture isn't always loud, and it doesn't just look like a shouting match or a dramatic blow up between people. Like, more often it shows up in quiet, ordinary moments that slip by unnoticed. And when I was preparing today, I thought of all the little examples of micro ruptures in relationships, and the first thing that came up was a sharp tone that kind of lands harder than intended. And I know I've brought this up to you before a lot. Like, tone is such a big thing for me in conversation when someone is saying something, but their tone is implying something else. And you're like, wow, you're not saying you're mad, but you really sound like you are. Or like a missed bid for connection when one person reaches out and the other doesn't notice. Or a joke that kind of stings instead of landing playfully, which is a big one for me. I get my feelings hurt kind of easily with you because you're such a jokester.
That is another tool in my toolbox, which is to bring greater attention to my responses or my tendencies. Definitely taking a moment before making light of something.
So I want to talk a little bit about why this matters before we start breaking stuff down. And I think it's important to note that all these little small moments register in our nervous system, whether we realize it or not. And the body reads them as, am I safe? Do I still belong here? Do I matter? And these passing moments. And it's really important to note that these little ruptures are not really proof that intimacy is broken, but they're proof that intimacy is actually alive. I think so often we're afraid to speak up when something hurts or like when we're upset, because we're afraid that we're saying that something's wrong, when in fact, when a relationship is alive and well, like, there's probably going to be more little micro ruptures, and each one creates kind of a chance to repair, and repair is the oxygen that intimacy breathes. And without them, intimacy could kind of stay shallow. And with them, intimacy can come really deep. It's an opportunity to really grow more in love, more in friendship, more in family, whatever the relationship is. I often think of the metaphor, thinking of these tiny little earthquakes in the soil of connection, and they shake the ground just enough to reveal what's underneath and give us a chance to plant something stronger in its place if we choose to see it that way. So what might these kind of ruptures look like? I said a few of them a second ago, but in romantic relationships, this might be a partner half listening to a conversation or scrolling on their phone while you're telling them a story, or forgetting to follow through on a small promise, a sharp tone in the middle of a busy day. And these types of moments really test intimacy, but repair makes it deeper. Like, even saying something like, I see you, I care, let's try that again. But they also can show up in friendships too, like a text left unanswered for days with a close friend, or a joke that cuts too close. feeling left out of plans. And repair in this instance could look like, you know, you matter enough to me to name this and reconnect. And I think it can be hard in friendships because I think we don't always recognize them as intimate relationships until we're hurt. We're like, oh, like, why was I so hurt by that? And it's because our friendships can be some of the most intimate relationships we have. And I think that it's important to note in this conversation that we're talking about all types of intimate relationships. Kind of on topic, off topic, getting left out is a big one for me. I don't always want to go or do the thing, but mm-hmm. I definitely want to be invited. I definitely get my feelings hurt when I'm not invited.
I know that we talked about this in episode one about our JOMO.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
The joy of missing out, that doesn't mean that it's, you know, solely JOMO. I mean, there's an element of, like, I want to be invited mm-hmm. and then not go.
Yeah, I feel like surely our listeners...
I want you to, you know, I want to be invited. I want to text, but then, like, I'm good. As we do our podcast in our pajamas.
Yeah, we're in our pajamas enjoying our night. This also can show up in families too. So like a parent dismissing a story, that's not a big deal. You know, I know that's definitely happened to my family, or generational misunderstandings. This used to happen a lot with my nan. There was just a divide in the way that we viewed the world. And so there would be these misunderstandings and it felt kind of like a little micro rupture in our relationship because I'd be like, you just don't understand, especially when I was younger, like a teen. Because I think when you're a teenager, you don't think anyone understands, like forgetting that everyone was once a teenager.
I mean, I'm reminded of taking this road trip up to Big Bear with my dad in like 2016, and we were eating breakfast at the Big Bear Diner or something. It has all these bumper stickers everywhere, and there's one above where the cooks are that says, hurry up and hire a teenager while they still know everything.
Did you think you knew everything when you were a teenager?
I think inherently, to my understanding, adolescence is deemed a time of psychosis.
Totally.
So
yeah.
I think that along with that comes an inherent superiority complex.
I mean, I definitely thought that I knew everything when I was a teenager. In fact, the funniest things that my mom ever said to you when you met her was, if you want to know how great Clean is, just ask her.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I'm like that, but when I was a teenager, I definitely gave off that vibe.
I mean,
like,
just speaking truth to power right now, statistically speaking, like your batting average is very high.
But that's why we work, right? So these micro ruptures, to get back on topic, and like work in teams, like anybody who works in a team knows this, but like if a colleague interrupts in a meeting, maybe credit's not given where credit's due in a lot of work settings, or feeling invisible in a group dynamic, maybe you're not feeling heard. These are all examples of how intimacy is in all of our relationships and where micro ruptures can happen. Intimacy is not the absence of micro ruptures. It's the willingness to notice and to name and repair them, no matter the relationship title. And the truth is, I think micro ruptures aren't a sign that something is broken. They're a sign that something is really alive and well and breathing. Wherever there's a relationship, there will be moments we miss each other. And here's the beauty. Intimacy is measured not by how perfectly we stay connected, but it's mostly measured by how bravely we return. Do we circle back? Do we notice? Every little tiny crack is an invitation, a chance to say, I still want to meet you here. I still want to be in this relationship. So what does repair mean? Or what does repair as intimacy look like? Repair isn't about fixing the problem. It's about turning back toward each other. And sometimes it's first towards yourself, which I will talk about a little bit later. When these little ruptures happen, intimacy deepens, not because we avoid the crack, but because we are willing to reach across it. Sometimes repair is as small as a softening of your tone, reaching for a hand, or saying, wait, that didn't land the right way. Can we please try again? Intimacy lives a lot in those gestures, not in the perfection of never messing up. I think as adults, we all accept that we're going to mess up, and people that were in relationships could too. And that's why it's so important to acknowledge the tenderness of returning again and again. So what does repair really, really mean? It means not fixing. So repair isn't about solving the issue like a math problem. It's about softening the space between two people. And this is a really big one for me. I said to you, Gabe, and we've been in a relationship for a while, so I think we've had our own versions of repair over the years. A big one for me is always, I don't like when it feels like someone's trying to fix me. I don't like feeling like I'm broken or that I'm some sort of problem to solve. I don't know if you have any feelings towards that, but I know that's a big one for me.
I just want to be accepted for who I am.
Yeah.
And especially now, you know, that I'm a little older than a bar mitzvah boy, I really feel as though I know myself. And in that, I would like to be accepted just for who I am without feeling like I need to change.
Yeah, it's such a big ask too, because real intimacy includes that understanding that people are who they are. And this episode's not really about love per se, and I'm sure we will definitely over the episodes talk more about this. But I think that in all close relationships, like the greatest gift we can give one another is just letting each other be. You're you and I'm me, and like, that's cool.
Are you quoting me right now?
Yeah.
That's sweet. That makes me feel good.
I'm quoting Gabe Noel.
That's very sweet.
Yeah.
That makes me feel, as the British would say, I feel very chuffed, you know? I feel very proud.
You have a lot of really good quotes. One of our listeners called them Gabe-isms.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
We can rename them to Jabril. Yeah.
Jabrobit.
I think they're yours, so we can call them whatever.
Oh, wow.
Like.
Yeah, it is my IP, I guess. So, yeah, Jabrobits.
You That's tell what
we're
us.
Today we're calling it Jabrobits.
Jabrobits, not tidbits, nor Gabe-isms. Okay. The other thing that I wrote down here, and just for the record, those of you who are listening, Gabe comes into these episodes kind of blind. He has no idea what we're going to talk about. So
I enjoy it. I mean, my life is that of an improviser generally. Mm-hmm. So long as microphones, you know, check, are working and the levels are right. I think this is a great example as well of like something I'm always trying to bring greater awareness to in our relationship and also just in my life in general is staying in my lane. The podcast and the material of the podcast and leading the podcast in terms of its content has been, and in my opinion, will always be your lead.
You're sweet. Well, I also...
This is true.
You're very sweet. Well... Since I'm the lead, we'll move on.
Okay, moving along.
The other thing I wrote down here that I think is a big one in the repair realm is not pretending it didn't happen. Ignoring ruptures only pushes intimacy underground. What we don't name, we carry. And I say this a lot in my teacher trainings and workshops. I'll always be the first one to fall on my sword. But for many, many years, especially in my younger years, I really wanted to believe that if I pretended like stuff didn't happen, that it would just go away.
Are you referring to something or does something come to mind first?
I mean, like the first thing that comes to mind is in my first intimate relationships, like when I was a teenager, your first love or whatever you want to call it, and things bothering me and just not really having the words or the skills to communicate, like that something wasn't okay with me or something hurt my feelings or I felt unseen. Just being like, oh, I'll ignore it for fear of that I would be rejected. I kind of carried that into a few of my relationships as I got older. And then the more I realized that really wasn't working anymore. Mm-hmm. And not just in intimate relationships like boyfriend, girlfriend, but like also in my personal life with like my family. It's always going to come out eventually. The container that you're holding these things in will get too heavy. Or the analogy that I think of a lot that was given to me by a therapist many years ago is every time you don't say something, every time you pretend like something didn't happen, you're putting like a rock in your book bag and your book bag just gets heavier and heavier and heavier. And at some point you just have to take it off and unload it. And you don't always know like when that bag is going to get too heavy and you're going to crack or the strap's going to bust. Like you're going to just be like stranded in your pain. And so better to do the work little by little instead of when it's heavy. Mm-hmm. And also, I think I learned through experience and even in our relationship, holding on to stuff and pretending it didn't happen. And then eventually when it's not a micro rupture anymore, it's like an explosion.
Yeah.
Then there's too much to kind of navigate.
Yeah.
And you get nothing done there either. You're like, well, now I've unloaded all this, but it was so much. It's overwhelming for both parties. We're not really getting anywhere. We're just kind of sitting in a pile of rocks, you know?
Yeah. That in and of itself doesn't really sound reparative either.
No, totally. I mean, I made the point here, it goes into the next thing, which is not talking it to death, right? Mm-hmm. But if you hold on to it for a really long time, you're probably going to eventually talk it to death.
Yeah.
Because I don't think repair has to be full of hours and hours of analysis. And I know you just said that I'm like very logical. So I will be the first to be like, okay, let's break this down, you know, like bit by bit. Sometimes words just get in the way. Like sometimes it's just like, there's nothing to say.
Again, be it that I'm a bar mitzvah boy times two, plus some more. I think it was the last episode where you were talking about how life be life in.
Mm-hmm.
And I often think just like people be people in everywhere.
People a lot.
People that are people in also applies to us as well.
100%.
And so in that, like, again, try to bring greater awareness to like not reading into.
Mm-hmm.
And that is an element of trust, over reading into something. I trust that if there's something that you want me to know, like, that you're going to tell me.
For sure. I know now, most definitely. I think I understand the power that repair equals reconnection. And that's a big one for me. I want to feel connected to you. I want to feel connected in all my relationships, my friendships included.
And connection to self as well.
100%. Thinking of repair less about the content of the conflict and more about the contact. That's a big shift that I've made recently, especially for someone who likes to be right all the time. This is a big one for me. And when I say I'm working on it, I am not proclaiming that I have it completely figured out, but I have noticed a big difference that it makes when I don't think about the content of what I'm trying to repair and I just try to have contact. What that looks like in those relationships, what those gestures look like. If you think of repair, tuning an instrument, and again, I'm not the musician, so if I butcher this analogy, you can fix it for me, but you are always repairing a lot of strings. We're getting a lot of strings delivered to our house. There's always strings to instruments being delivered here to the house. But like if you think of repair, tuning your instrument, the string doesn't need to be rebuilt. It's just gently brought back into harmony so music can continue. And I see you adjusting them all the time and seeing that as an analogy for what we're talking about, like as a repair.
To that end, a story that comes to mind is I remember being in high school and doing this like concerto competition. I was going to play this like solo bass piece with a pianist, and she is an amazing pianist named Andrea Swan, Chicago-based classical pianist, played with the Lyric Opera Chicago, I believe. And this soloistic bass piece, you know, was pretty high up, so I was only playing the top two strings. And I remember I was tuning, and I said to her, well, I'm not going to worry about these other strings, the lower strings. I'll just tune the top strings because those are the ones I'm playing. And Andrea Swan said to me, well, those other strings still resonate. So you want them to be in tune as well, even if you're not playing them. And that's in a way analogous to what you're talking about.
Totally. I was thinking about today how to make all of our podcasts approachable for whoever's listening, and how it's one thing to talk about these things, but it's also cool if you can give living examples about what repair looks like, what it sounds like. I was thinking about all the ways in which there are certain gestures that help with repair or embodied repair gestures. Something as simple as a gentle touch, a hand resting on your arm or your back, or reaching for a hand, even if briefly. That's a big one for me. Sometimes if we've had a stressful moment and you just touch my hand, like I feel less anxious. I feel like that connection.
Grounded,
yeah. Or kind of a nudge or a squeeze, or even something as simple as eye contact, meeting eyes after looking away, because I think it's hard when you feel like there is this rupture. It's really easy to disconnect with the gaze as a way to protect, or even softening the gaze. I know for me, when I get upset, I can feel that I'm really opening my eyes really big because I'm trying to like get a point across. And I was in a play once, and I was playing this character. I was supposed to be like emotional, and I guess I was like really opening my eyes, and the director was like, you're saying the words, but can you soften your gaze? Can you just soften your gaze? You'll be more believable. And I think that that applies here in life too, like softening the gaze and letting your eye say, I'm here again. You know, I wasn't here for a second, but I'm here now. Something that we've done in a workshop a few years back is like breathing together, taking one slow inhale and exhale side by side, or looking at each other and breathing, or even just a sigh of repair. Like we've both done this. We've had like a heavy discussion and you're just like, whew. Okay, moving on. Or even like physical shifts, like turning your body back towards the person, sitting closer after pulling away, or leaning in rather than leaning out. One of the things I see you do when we're having conversations is you sit with your hands palms up. And that makes a big difference for me, especially if I'm the one sharing something challenging versus you crossing your arms. So like even body language is such a big one, because it feels like you're receptive and you're trying your best to listen to what I'm saying and sharing and being the best listener that you can be. And a big one in our household that I think is kind of underrated, I think the biggest one, is play. A smile after tension, or like a laugh, not to completely like blow up our spot and tell all our secrets, but like we have code language where we'll just be like, we just know when you say that, it's just like, well, that's ridiculous.
I mean, even beyond language, the Pilates core exercise that I do.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Where I like crisscross my legs, like back and forth, going up and down really fast.
That's your just, scissors, your Pilates scissors?
For whatever reason, you somehow have deemed that to be hilarious. And obviously, you know, I've made that part of my routine. Or rather, hearing your lecture right now, what comes to mind is disarming and de-escalating. at least that's what comes to mind for me. Is the next thing I'm going to say, is it lifting us up or is it perpetuating the moment?
Totally. I think they're all ways of saying, I want closeness more than I want distance. And however you want to say that, right. you could verbally say it. But I think sometimes these other like physical gestures have a lot more impact than we even notice. I think when you put words to it, maybe. I thought about also like just repairs in other relationships, like friendships. Something as simple as like sending a quick, hey, I realize I didn't respond. Do you want to catch up via text or phone? You know, especially if it's been like a delayed response, or sharing a laugh about something kind of to diffuse a sharp situation in every relationship. Just like putting the phone down and giving your undivided attention, especially if you feel tension, you know, just like, okay, well, I don't know if me being on my phone is really going to help that. I think in friendships it's just saying, I want to stay close. Like, I want to remain friends, however that makes sense for you. Also, what do these gestures look like with family? I'm not a parent, but I know that when I was younger, a big thing for me was if my mom admitted to me, hey, I wasn't listening. I mean, I'm a talkative adult, so you can imagine I was quite the talkative child. And now I know there's no way anyone could stay with everything I say all the time. But when I was a kid, it would hurt my feelings. And my mom would just be really honest and you'd be like, hey, I wasn't listening. I didn't catch all that. Like, can you tell me again? Mm-hmm. And that was really effective for me. And even like a sibling, like offering a hug after like a fight, or cooking, or doing like a small act of service as a way of saying I care. And this was a big one for me. I used to do when I would like fight with my parents or whatever, like I would always like make my dad like, you know, snack or something, or like try to do something kind, you know. Because I think in families, it's important to let people know that even when we miss each other, we'll come back. It's just so important. As far as work is concerned, it might look like a work colleague saying, hey, sorry, I interrupted. Please finish your thought. Maybe a manager or boss acknowledging a mistake, you know, that they made. And this happens. I mean, sometimes even I do, or I have to send a follow-up email being like, hey, I'm sorry. It took me so long to respond to this. I didn't forget. I've just been busy. Here's the answer to your question. I think it's really important to circle back, especially if you, you know, work in a job where you have clients or customers too. You know, those are important relationships to circle back to too.
My teacher, John Clayton, say he's talking in a lesson and you started to play, he would stop talking. And I remember him saying, if you're going to play, I'm going to listen.
I think the overall thread is that repair looks different in each relationship, but the heartbeat is the same. That heartbeat of like, I see you, you matter, let's connect, let's work it out, right? And how that translates to intimacy. Every little micro rupture touches the nervous system, even the tiniest disconnect, a distracted glance, a delayed response, a sharp tone registers as a subtle threat for some people. And our bodies whisper, do I matter? Am I safe? And it's important to know that not everybody responds the same way. And so if you're sensing that someone has responded in this way, it's super important to circle back, because I think intimacy is for sure a willingness to name the rupture, not dramatically, but not with blame, but with honesty, saying like, that landed funny. Can we try again? Is an act of intimacy in and of itself, just acknowledging it. And it's choosing connection over silence, presence over pretense. And I know that can be challenging, even for myself, but it's so, so important, because honesty is the soil for intimacy in all of these relationships. I think these little micro ruptures, if you want to call them, matter not because they mean something is wrong, but because how we meet them really does decide whether intimacy deepens or withers. And it might really be the difference between whether a relationship stays a relationship or it ends. When I was in school, I had a professor who, it was a psychology class I was taking on close relationships, and he used a metaphor of intimacy being like skin, and every time it's cut or scraped, it has the potential to heal stronger than before, but only if it's cleaned and cared for and given attention. Left unattended, even the smallest wound can become infected, smallest of paper cuts. And so I always liked that analogy, but also to think of it as a reframe. Micro ruptures aren't failures, they're invitations, tiny little doorways to being closer and connecting on perhaps an even deeper way than you ever imagined, feeling close to someone in a way that you didn't know was possible. For me, I am not afraid to, for lack of a better term in this moment, argue. Like, I'm not afraid to have a challenging conversation because I think it's a way for me to say, here's another chance to show I choose you. And I don't want this to be a problem forever. Like, let's deal with it now. In all my relationships, even my friendships, like, I choose to be your friend. I choose to be your lover. I choose to be in this relationship. And so therefore, I choose to talk about this. But here's the thing. And I was thinking about this a lot today. Repair isn't just about the words. Like, you can say sorry 100 times. But if the body still feels tense, the repair has not landed. Like, this idea goes back to what I was saying earlier about the nervous system, because these little ruptures and repair, they aren't just happening in the mind. They're happening in the nervous system, and every little micro rupture is felt first in the body. I know for me that shows up as shallow breathing, tight jaw, my heart rate speeds up, and every little repair helps my nervous system come back. Settle down. When I'm upset, I feel my whole body. Even sometimes after I've made sense of why something's happened analytically and logically, I'm like, okay, I understand. Like, my physical body will be not okay yet. It like takes time. And I think the disconnection activates survival mode in some, like, especially like a sharp tone. I keep using that as an example, probably because that's a personal one for me, because I hear tone very specifically, like a way of reading between the lines, especially in a world where I feel like a lot of people do have a hard time putting words to like how they're feeling. So the only thing you can go off of is tone, like how they're saying something and how their body language is matching up with it.
This is interesting because that's a real life example of reparative skill is clarification. Because there are times when you perceive my tone as being much more than it really was.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just like choking on the splinters over here.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a thing for me. Like, I'm always listening.
It's also time spent in the sense that, like, unless it's like a really dire situation, neither one of us approach one another first thing when we wake up. When you wake up, you're like a computer that just powers up and you're awake. I can be slower to rise. Now it's interesting because we're both mirroring one another, but you would be asking me something and I just like, I would have no memory of it. Like, I would be still like asleep.
Totally, totally. I'm glad that we're a little bit better about that now.
Me too.
I think a lot of this conversation about repair really brings about regulation. When you work to repair things, it kind of signals the brain and the body that the threat's gone and you're safe again, like we're okay. And to remember that the nervous system doesn't always work off of logic. You can't think your way back into safety. So if you're feeling like your nervous system responding in a way, fight, flight, or freeze, you're not going to be able to think your way out of that. Repair is really less about explanation and more about a felt experience. And the nervous system is always listening to tone and to timing and presence. And that's something that's big for me. Like, I would rather just spend time together. Or as you say, time spent is super important to me versus
it's
like
very much your love language.
Yeah, it's my love language versus like talking about it. Like, once we've come to the logical resolution, like we need to just move on. Like,
once we're on the same page.
Correct.
It's just like, Then what? Like, you have to keep reading the book? Like, y'all on the same page? Like,
yeah, we're on page two, right? Yeah.
We're on podcast three.
Yeah, yeah. So I think embodied cues matter the most. Like a softer voice, open body language, like I said earlier, not crossing your arms, not turning away, slowing down your words and your breath and your movements. And if it's appropriate, an attuned touch, like a way to have intimacy, nervous system, if you will, like person to person. And I think going even further, talking about what repair might sound like and what it doesn't sound like. And this was a request we got from one of our listeners to share some examples of maybe things you might not want to say, like in a relationship. And their question about reparative language was the whole reason behind this episode. So thank you for your suggestion, listener. If you do have a topic that you're interested in hearing Gabe and I riff about, we would love to hear your suggestions. anyway, what does repair sound like? Repair can sound like, that didn't land the way I meant to. Can I try again? I noticed I shut down. I don't want to stay disconnected. Or I care more about us than about being right. That's a big one. What it doesn't sound like is, well, you misunderstood me. Or I guess I'm always the problem. Or let's just move on. The last three examples I gave, they create like this repair gap. What I mean by that is like the longer we wait, the harder it feels. Using language that feels dismissive can create a repair gap. And so another way to look at it is like the longer that you wait, the harder it's going to feel to reconnect. The tiny micro rupture is easy to name in a moment, but when we avoid it, distance starts to build between us. And you may even get to a point you don't even remember why you're upset. I don't know if that's ever happened to you, but
it's interesting. The juxtaposition of a repair gap, which is widening, and then the examples you just gave were minimizing.
Mm-hmm.
When you minimize someone else's experience, you're creating a wider gap.
Totally. Or you might create avoidance, right? So like what happens when we avoid repair or we avoid conversation? Like it kind of might feel like the space has like a chill. Often you hear people say like, it feels like there's an elephant in the room. Like I don't really feel the elephant, but I definitely feel like a coldness. Like when there's a gap, it's just like, wow, like I don't really want to be in this room. Like I don't want to be here, or conversation feels a little thin. Have you ever been like, wow, we have all this time and this conversation is feeling very sparse? Laughter doesn't land the same way. Or maybe even just like your body knows something is off, even if the mind insists it's fine. So we're fine energy versus actual reconnection is a challenging one, right? So saying it's no big deal or pretending nothing happened may kind of smooth the surface at first, but it doesn't really restore intimacy. And the repair reopens the channel between kind of the nervous system and it recreates safety. So in my experience, I've even seen people that have been met with we're fine energy or pretending like things weren't a big deal. And eventually, it can even be months later, they just end a relationship. Like, you know, back 6 months ago, X, Y, and Z happened. And like, I'm not about that. There can definitely be a delayed reaction or even kind of like a awkward moment that I think we've all been in where you're like, should I bring it up or should I let it go? Like, if I say something now, will it make it worse? Like, are they even going to remember like this thing that they think that they smoothed over, but actually it didn't really like happen? And that little kind of tug of war inside of you, like between fear of rocking the boat, but really longing for closeness, especially if you care about someone, you're like, man, I care about this person, but in order to remain close to this person, I got to bring this thing up. And it's like really awkward. And one of the things I really appreciate about you as the anytime I've ever brought anything up to you, you always tell me when I bring something up from the past or maybe even something that we've spoken about several times and you say that there's no statute of limitations on like me bringing it up or us talking about it.
Well, specifically, there's no statute of limitations on how you feel.
I think it's also like kind of where indirectly speaking about like different repair styles. There definitely is different repair styles. The first one that comes up as I think about the person who's like, I need to talk now versus I need to calm down first, kind of honoring that and respecting that. One person may want to process immediately or talk immediately while the other may need space to regulate. It's important to like learn each other's rhythms. That's a huge part of repair because you can't repair if the other person's not ready. I think like verbal repair is super important, like leading with words like I'm sorry or that came out wrong, or people with the style, people who like verbal repair might still want to talk through it right away. And I think that that's cool. My suggestion for that is to lead with clarity and transparency. I think the challenge with verbal repair is that you can start to over-explain and talk past the felt repair. Because sometimes when you over-explain, it doesn't feel genuine. I'm not saying don't do it, but that would be like my, for anyone who's listening to it, my tidbit advice, it would be that.
Well, maintaining that awareness of perhaps you're losing someone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've both experienced that. I think everybody has, where you're saying something and maybe it's not landing.
Yeah.
Attempting as best we can to remain in the duality. I'm having experience. You're having experience. I'm saying something. You're hearing what I'm saying filtered through your perceptual positioning system.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my tone, this is how I feel. And yet, like, maybe it's landing different.
Mm-hmm. And some people are more like physical repair, like repair through touch or closeness, like a hug or hand squeeze or leaning in. I think that the strength of this is it communicates safety. I think we all feel safe, especially with our nervous system when we have that touch. I think the challenge with physical repair is if it's overused, it can feel like skipping over the conversation. So I would definitely be more mindful of that. I know I am. And then your favorite, I think I'm going to say it's your favorite, which is playful repair, like repair through humor and silliness and goofy face, or your favorite, a song. You love to make up songs about whatever's going on in our life, and it's kind of hard not to laugh at those.
I mean, I get straight to my balsamic reduction, which is just the general like absurdity of being alive in any given moment, whether that's a moment of joy, a moment of challenge. You've done something 100 times and then that day you stub your toe. Then the pain takes like 4 seconds to like radiate. Even in that, sometimes I find myself maybe not laughing, haha, but sometimes getting close to it of just like the general absurdity of just being alive. Speaking of like the unbearable lightness of being, there's that quote I always liked. On the surface, the intelligent lie, and behind it, the unintelligible truth.
I think that...
Cool, bro.
I think that playful repair is cool because it breaks tension and invites warmth. The only thing is there have definitely been times where, at least for me, like it can feel a little dismissive, like if I'm really trying to be vulnerable. So it's just something to be aware of, but I'm kind of used to it now. There's also just time and space. Sometimes people just need time and space, and like that's totally cool. I think the challenge with time and space is that you just want to make sure that it's not making the other person involved feel like you're avoiding. You definitely have to make an effort to circle back, like when you feel like you've regulated. So I think all of these practices just help kind of build trust before the next rupture. Daily habits of checking in, softening, clearing energy, and how little rituals like we've been talking about, a look, a phrase, a squeeze can act as relational stitches. I think it's also valid to know it's kind of hard to initiate repair, like, especially if you're the one that, like, I don't know, caused it, like caused the micro rupture, like this general fear of rejection. Like repair is really vulnerable, and it means saying like I care and I want closeness, and that's a risk, like for anyone. Like what if the other person doesn't want to meet you there? What if they're not willing to repair? So it's definitely can be scary. Also, there's ego and pride. Like not that anyone here in this room knows anything about that or out there listening to the podcast. LOL. We all have ego. We all have pride. We'd rather be right than be close sometimes. And that's just real life. And I think admitting rupture feels like admitting weakness for some, but it really is an act of courage, in my opinion. And then there might be a little shame. Like if we caused a rupture, we may feel unworthy of repair. If we were hurt, we may feel silly for being too sensitive, or both of these things block reconnection. And also there can be a general discomfort, which I think it's human nature. And we learn a lot about this when we talk about kleshas. You know, as humans, it's part of our condition to avoid anything that feels like discomfort, any type of suffering. And so it feels easier to let things slide, like, oh, it's fine, no big deal. But that avoidance builds the repair gap that we were talking about, and distance kind of grows even while everyone insists that they're okay. So it's really important to, again, like reframe. I think repair feels hard because it's so intimate, and it asks us to take off our armor and to reach across the space and to risk being met or not being met. And yet that very vulnerability is what makes intimacy possible and what makes relationships so rich, full of like connection. So I think the big takeaway for me when I was thinking about this is, what is an apology versus a performance? You know, and you told the story about like Breaking Bad, but a true apology should lead to like deeper intimacy, where a performance is going to create a little bit more distance. And so if you're not getting the result you want from your apology, you might want to reflect a little bit inward and ask yourself, was that a real apology? Like,
you know, or does the apology match the behavior?
Yeah, there's that. Because a real apology usually is pretty simple and heartfelt. When things come a little too wordy, like Walter White on Breaking Bad, like they just seem like a performance. Like you're just doing it for yourself. It's like a monologue just for you. Dr. Chris, I don't know if he's listening, but my therapist, it would be kind of cool if Dr. Chris was listening to the podcast, but he said to me once, give yourself like an intimacy check. Like after an apology, like, do you feel warm and close to the person or do you feel pressure to get over it? Because that's really the difference between repair and performance. And then like, are you taking time to self-repair? Are you regulating your own nervous system? Are you coming in hot? That's a big one for me. I'm always checking myself to make sure I'm not coming in real hot. Am I at a place where I can take responsibility for my actions? Because if I'm not, or my reactions, if I'm not, then maybe I'm not ready for like the conversation. And that's a big one for me. And I know that you can speak to this given that you are my closest relationship, but sometimes I'll settle on something for like a solid week before I bring it up because it's really important to me that like I keep myself in check. I'm not saying I'm perfect at it, but I feel like I'm pretty good at it at the tender age of 42. Like I'm pretty good at acknowledging that with you and being like, you know, I thought about it, you know, I need to be able to have a level head. And I'm constantly kind of thinking about how to soothe that inner child or that like inner protector that I carry before trying to repair other relationships or someone else's, because I'm really aware that whenever we get upset and we get angry or we get sad, like we're talking to the 5-year-old version of them. And that's a precious thing, you know, and I really don't want to walk away feeling like I know that person better and more intimate. So it's super important to me. So my final thoughts with all of this, micro ruptures happen and you're going to roll your eyes at each other. Somebody's going to use that tone that I talked about. Like somebody's definitely going to forget to do the dishes or to do the laundry or whatever. Maybe you're going to not get invited to something, maybe just because the person forgot to invite you. And intimacy isn't about never messing up. It is about learning to say, oops, my bad. Want to try that again? Like redo. Repair doesn't have to be a Shakespeare's monologue. Sometimes it's a high five. Sometimes it's a goofy face or a funny song. And sometimes it's just handing over a snack as a peace offering, which happens a lot here in this house. So the next time you feel that little crack open up, don't panic. Don't lawyer up. Just remember, love isn't about avoiding the mess. Love is about cleaning it up together with snacks. Until next time. 3-piece.